funding for Think comes from SMU's continuing and professional education.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. Are the lifelong partnerships of same-sex couples different from those of heterosexual couples? And how do a couple's interactions with society, their families, and each other change when they have the option to get married? My guest today was interested both in how gay people might change the institution of marriage and how the option might change the lives of same-sex couples. So she spent her sabbatical year based in the Netherlands, a country that has allowed gay and lesbian couples to marry since 2001. MV Lee Badgett is professor of economics and director of the Center for Public Policy and Administration at the University of Massachusetts at Amherst. Her new book is called When Gay People Get Married, What Happens When Societies Legalize Same-Sex Marriage. Lee, welcome to Think.
Thanks, Chris. It's great to be here.
You undertook this project realizing that there are really two ways to study this issue, either looking at the meaning of marriage as a concept or looking at the act of getting married as a choice that two individuals make. Can you talk about what makes that such an important distinction?
Well, I think it's, to me, it relates to the debate about gay marriage here in the U.S. We tend to see two really different sides. One group of people says, you know, how could gay marriage possibly change this institution? You know, it's not like a man and a woman who get married will suddenly decide that they want same-sex partners instead. And so it seems kind of crazy to think that that allowing gay couples to marry will do anything to the institution. Then on the other side, we've got people who are very worried. They say, well, this seems like such a big departure from what marriage looked like historically and culturally, that that we think we're afraid that something bad will happen to marriage. So I think the distinction between what people are doing when they get married and what people are thinking when they get married are sort of the source of this apparent divide in the political debate.
And what do we know about what marriage does for people who choose to take part in it, whether they are same-sex couples or heterosexual couples?
Well, there's a lot of evidence for heterosexual couples that that marriage is good for them in different ways, both economically and in terms of their health. People who get married live longer, for instance. They have more wealth. They're more likely to own homes. They tend to have lives that look a little better and healthier than for people who never get married. So the question is really, would the same thing happen for same-sex couples? And I think the only way you can know for sure is to go out and study what really happened. So that's why I thought looking at the Netherlands would be such a great opportunity. They've had marriage for same-sex couples since 2001. And for a few years before that, they let gay couples get what they call a registered partnership, which is what basically we call here in the U.S. a civil union. So it's something that looks like marriage, has a lot of the same rights of marriage, but doesn't have that word that's actually attached to it.
Were you surprised when you first got to the Netherlands to find so many same-sex couples vehemently opposed to the idea of getting married when they had the right to do so?
Yeah, that was very interesting. I think you know, to some extent, things are a little bit different in Europe than they are in the U.S. I mean, people are much more likely to get married here if you're in a heterosexual couple than in the Netherlands, for instance. It's much more common for people to live together without getting married, usually until they have a kid. And once they have a kid in Europe, then they usually do get married. But the people that I first met there were mostly lesbian couples who were identified as very fervent feminists, and they had a lot of concerns about marriage. And so when I first met them, some of them said, oh, marriage, that's something for heterosexual people. That's not really something that we want to do. And that was surprising. And what was even more surprising was sometimes I ran into people in couples where one person wanted to get married and thought that would be a really cool thing to do. The other partner didn't want to get married. So once that option's there for couples, then they really have to reckon with those differences. And that's not something that gay couples have ever had to do here in the U.S. or in other parts of the world where they can now get married. So that's quite a new thing for gay people to have to grapple with.
Well, and I guess because it's so new, maybe that explains why it seems as if there are so many couples where each individual has a different expectation of what marriage might or might not do for them.
Yes, I think that's right. I think some people see it as being an important thing to do for practical reasons, and certainly a lot of heterosexual couples get married for the same kinds of practical reasons, whether it's, you know, to get health insurance or to make sure you have inheritance rights, those sorts of things. Whereas for other people, it's a very deeply personal and emotional kind of decision to make, and sometimes those things really clash. I talked to one couple where they had very different ideas. One of them was literally, she was just out with a friend one day. It was a really beautiful day, and they were, I think, riding a motorcycle through the Dutch countryside, and kind of out of nowhere, she had this very intense feeling that she wanted to marry her partner. And it surprised her, because she was, in fact, one of those feminists who had always been a bit suspicious of marriage, that maybe it wasn't such a good thing for women. And so she was a little bit dismayed. She had to think very hard about why she wanted to get married. And she realized that this was it was just a feeling that she had for her partner, and it was something that she wanted to express in front of the law, and in front of her family, and in front of her friends who came from all over the world eventually for their wedding. But before they could get there, she had to actually try to convince her partner to get married, and that took actually several months get her to see things in the same kind of way. So yes, that's right. Quite often, partners do see really different advantages and disadvantages of getting married.
What's really interesting, Lee, about that description is that it sounds as if in places where marriage is now more accepted and legally allowable across a wide swath of the population, people are choosing more sort of emotional reasons for doing it, as opposed to here, where we so often frame the discussion in terms of property rights and in terms of protection of both partners.
Right. That's true. Although, I think that we've shifted that discussion even here, away from some of the rights issues. I think the rights angle is something that's very important to some people. I mean, here in the U.S., it's probably more important than it is in the Netherlands and some of the other Western European countries, where marriage isn't really as tied to things like health insurance benefits or other kinds of social supports like we are here. Most people get health insurance in the U.S. either through their own employer or through their spouse's employer. So that becomes, those practical reasons become really important here. But I do hear a lot more about the emotional effect, and it's interesting. And both in the couples that I interviewed in the Netherlands, and actually a more recent study that I did here in Massachusetts, what we found was that it was that emotional component that turns out to be the most important thing. Yeah, the practical stuff does matter, but most of the time, people in Massachusetts said they were getting married because they wanted to express love and commitment, and that was the most important reason, not the benefits.
How does the availability of either a registered partnership or a legal marriage change the way other members of society, whether it's people within the couple's family or just people within the community, seem to accept them as a couple?
That's a good question, and I think I might sort of shift that just a little bit, because I do think there's a difference between the registered partnership or civil union type of relationship and the marriage type of relationship. And the couples in the Netherlands talked a lot about this, because they had a choice. Both gay and straight couples in Holland can choose either from the registered partnership or from marriage, and they mostly choose marriage. It's actually quite rare for a heterosexual couple to choose registered partnership, and it's becoming more rare for gay couples too. And when I asked them about that, they said it's pretty simple. I mean, on one hand, that term, registered partnership, sounds like something an accountant would have invented.
Sounds very sterile.
Very sterile, very, very dry. And they said it doesn't have any of the feelings that we feel for each other embedded in that. Plus, nobody knows what it means. If you go to another country, or if you're describing what you are to other people, and sometimes even In that 3 years when they could only get registered partnerships, the couples who did that just said, you know, we're going to think of this as a wedding. We're going to think about this as if it were a marriage. And that's because that's what people understand. As one person put it to me, she said, you know, two-year-olds get marriage. Everybody understands marriage. And that's why it's so powerful. And that's why the term, it's not just a word. It's a large social understanding of what it means when two people get married. And you just can't replace that with registered partnership. That's basically what they thought.
Yeah, and your conclusion ultimately is that registered partnership is sort of useful only if it's a stepping stone toward a full marriage.
I think that's right. And that's what it's been in lots of places. That was true in the Netherlands. It was true in Norway. It was true in Sweden. And it was, you know, here in the U.S., I think that was true for Vermont and for Connecticut. So we do see that as a pretty good stepping stone. And briefly, domestic partnerships in California were a stepping stone on the way to marriage rights. So it's important because it does give people something that they didn't have beforehand. They get some legal recognition, and sometimes, you know, their friends and family members, I think, get what that means. Even though it has this funny phrase attached to it instead of the simple thing, marriage.
So marriage is allowed currently between same-sex couples in Belgium, Spain, the Netherlands, Canada, South Africa, and Norway. The longest one, obviously, is the Netherlands, which started in 2001.
Right.
How have ideas about what marriage means shifted, or have they shifted at all in the Netherlands?
Well, that was one of the big questions that I was asking in this book. And I looked in a lot of different ways and lots of different places to see if something had changed in terms of how people thought about marriage. And I just don't see it. I looked at what heterosexual couples do. Do they get married? Did something change in the trends around marriage in those countries? Did something change in the trends around divorce? What about having babies before getting married? And in all of those cases, looking at all these European countries, I just didn't see any change in the trend at all. I mean, if anything, actually, it seemed like some of the older trends were sort of evening out. So in lots of these countries, maybe 30-40% of women have children without being married. And that was a long-term trend. It started in the 1970s. It continued on up through the early 90s. But it all happened well before any of these countries allowed same-sex couples to get married. And actually, it happened in lots of countries where gay couples don't have any rights. So it's something that's really more about heterosexual life, family life, things that had changed for a much longer period of time that didn't really have anything to do with gay couples getting married. And when I talked to these couples, these same-sex couples, they just sounded so much like their heterosexual peers. We have lots of studies of marriage and among heterosexuals, and it sounded very familiar. It sounded like they basically see, you know, reasons to get married being the same, and their ideas about what marriage means all seem pretty much the same as they do for heterosexual couples. And then finally, I also looked at some attitudes of heterosexual couples about the institution of marriage. You know, do they increasingly think that it's an outdated institution? And it turns out that in the countries where gay couples have rights, heterosexuals are not increasingly seeing marriage as outdated. So I looked for it, but I couldn't find it. It looks to me like the idea of marriage has.
My guest is M.V. Lee Badgett, Professor of Economics and Director of the Center for Public Policy and Administration at the University of Massachusetts at Amherst. Her new book is called When Gay People Get Married, What Happens When Societies Legalize Same-Sex Marriage. You can join us after the break by calling 1-800-933-5372 or send an email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's informal courses for adults. Short courses in the arts, writing, languages, history, and communication start weekly in September. You can learn something new. Details at smu.edu/think.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest is M.V. Lee Badgett, Professor of Economics and Director of the Center for Public Policy and Administration at the University of Massachusetts at Amherst. Her new book is called When Gay People Get Married, What Happens When Societies Legalize Same-Sex Marriage. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can send an email to think@kera.org, or you can call us at 1-800-933-5372. Lee, if you take in countries where marriage is allowed for same-sex couples, if you take couples that are essentially the same demographics other than their sexual orientation, are the rates of marriage pretty similar, or are they very different for same-sex couples?
That's an interesting observation. They are actually a bit lower, and a lot of people have wondered why that would be, and I think it is a very interesting question. I think that it reflects lots of different changes that are going on for gay people. The possibility of disagreement that we talked about earlier means that that couples have to somehow, you know, come to some kind of understanding about what they're going to do. In fact, I had a friend who for a long time predicted that the first thing that would happen if gay people could get married was that a lot would break up because they just wouldn't be able to decide. And so, you know, some of the couples I talked to were together for years before they decided whether or not to go ahead and get married. And some were still thinking about it because a lot of people would ask them. That's sort of, you know, what heterosexual couples are used to, I think. But gay couples aren't used to their friends and family members saying, so, when are you two going to tie the knot? And so I think that over time we'll see more and more couples. We actually see many more getting married here in the U.S. than we do in Europe, and I think that probably reflects both the greater benefits, economic benefits to marriage here in the U.S., and also, you know, a different culture, and where marriage is just more common for everybody. So in Massachusetts, for instance, we've seen well over half of the same-sex couples here get married in just the first 5 years, and I expect that will continue to increase. I think the other thing is there are some folks who still are, you know, as we talked about before, they're still just a little bit uncomfortable with that idea, and they want to see what's going to happen with marriage.
And I wonder if there's also a factor of having been told for centuries that this was not something that would ever be available to them. The gay community sort of created other ways to establish for themselves long-term partnerships that didn't necessarily require the sanction of marriage, whether by the state or by a church.
That's right. And many of these couples in the U.S. in particular have had commitment ceremonies where they actually wrote their own ceremonies. They spent, you know, many heartfelt months trying to figure out what this was going to mean and explaining it to their friends and family, and spending lots of money on big parties and things like that. So, you know, so marriage might not seem quite so important for those reasons if you've already actually taken those kinds of steps or taken some of the legal steps to have a will and some of the basic protections that you get automatically with marriage.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. We're talking to Lee Badgett about her book, When Gay People Get Married, What Happens When Societies Legalize Same-Sex Marriage. Let's go to Ken in Plano. Hey, Ken.
Yes, hi. Chris, if this sounds familiar, it's because I asked this exact question of Henry Waxman last week, and he avoided it like the plague. And so I'm going to ask it again. I think I'll probably get a better answer this time, which sort of points to makes the point there.
Well, Lee is not a politician, culture, which helps.
Yeah, well, our culture, one of the struggles in our culture is to accept elements of human nature. You know, you got politicians having affairs right and left, and, Kinsey virtually proved that you, that our sexual lives are complicated. Are we as a culture ever going to grow up? I mean, the Europeans are farther ahead than we are on this topic. I was wondering what your guest had to say about that. Thank you very much.
Thanks for your call.
Well, certainly the issue of homosexuality is one of those big taboos that has slowly been disintegrating, I think, as a taboo. And so certainly that aspect of something that we might agree on is kind of a natural part of human sexual life, human sexuality, is now going to be much more fully integrated into our culture and into the laws if you allow same-sex couples to get married. And I do think that's important. I think what this means for gay couples is that they feel much more included, that who they are is accepted in an important way, both from the people who come to their wedding and support them, and also people, the politicians who've actually decided to change the laws. I think that there may be kind of more that the caller's thinking about in terms of, you know, extramarital sexuality, and you know, I think that's a somewhat different issue. But certainly the questions about whether politicians can be open about being gay is a big concern for many of them. And we occasionally find out that a politician who we thought was heterosexual turns out to not be. And I think there will be much less pressure on young people, on politicians, on everyone really to say that they're heterosexual when in fact that's not really how they want to live their lives.
You have a poignant story in the book, Lee, about a lesbian couple, I think in the Netherlands, who decided on the spur of the moment to get married and did a very quick ceremony. And one of the women didn't invite her father, didn't think to invite him, and he was crushed that he hadn't been welcome at this ceremony. And I wonder if you can speak to the responses that people have had from family members who maybe had less trouble accepting their relationships with a same-sex partner if they were able to have a marriage sort of blessing the whole thing.
Yes, that was definitely true, and I actually heard that same kind of story from other people who had, for one reason or another, not invited their family members, and they were later very disappointed, because people understand that marriage is an important step for couples, and I think that's what surprises gay people sometimes. They don't necessarily expect other people to care quite so much about the fact that they're getting married, and so having having those folks present really makes a difference. And most people were much more supportive. We also found this in our study in Massachusetts. I mean, most people got the idea about marriage, and they wanted to be there. And parents contributed money and for the weddings, and later on, people actually. We're kind of like the marriage police. It was very cute. I mean, couples told stories about forgetting about their anniversaries, and they would, have a knock on the door, and it would be the neighbor bringing them a cake and a card. It's like, oh, we remember that you got married a year ago or whenever it was, and or people's mothers reminding them, that they're supposed to use the term wife for their female partners now. They can't call them girlfriends anymore because they're married. So it definitely makes a difference, and these couples felt it. From the sad stories to the happy ones, it definitely made a big difference for many family members.
We have an email here from Matt in Dallas who writes, Dennis Kucinich during the 2004 presidential campaign said that there are two marriages being discussed, state marriage and church marriage. The state has no business in matters of the church. Conversely, the church has no business to meddle in state civil law. This is a civil right, meaning marriage, that has been granted to a majority of people and denied to a small minority on religious grounds. Only when you separate the two types of marriage can anyone progress this issue forward. What do you think about that?
I guess personally, on one hand, it's a nice, neat distinction, and it's one that in the Netherlands and in France, for instance, they've made very clear. You get married at town hall. If you want to go to a church, you can do that later, but what really counts is actually getting married at town hall. Here, there's a blurring of the lines to a certain extent because ministers or clergy of one kind or another are generally allowed to perform wedding ceremonies in addition to more secular officials, justices of the peace. In Massachusetts, anybody can marry another couple. You can get a little special dispensation for whatever reason to be the officiant at a marriage ceremony. So, we have that blurring of the lines in terms of who can actually conduct a ceremony, but we're pretty clear in this country, I think, about marriage being a secular institution from the legal perspective. I think trying too hard to separate those things out, some people have said, well, why not just have civil unions for everybody? That seems attractive, but I think people just don't, the term civil union just is not going to have any meaning. People will still talk about it as a marriage. So I think, I'm not sure we could actually make an even sharper distinction than we already have. It's already pretty clear that marriage is, you know, what it means legally is determined by the law. What it means religiously is determined by the churches and faith communities. But and a lot of what marriage means is determined by everybody. It's determined by society. And I think that's you know, that's the other piece of it that we often forget. Marriage has changed quite a bit over the last century, and that's not so much because religions have changed. It is partly because the law has changed, but mainly the law changed in reaction to the way we wanted marriage to be.
You found a difference in the numbers of gay men who were marrying and staying together in marriages and lesbian women. What do you think explains that?
You know, it's different, too, between Europe and the U.S. Again, in Europe, it's much more common for men to marry than it was for lesbians. And I think that was because of this feminism factor, the suspicion that many feminists had of marriage. And marriage was something that often constrained women both legally and socially, and so it just made a lot of feminists very nervous. And I think that's probably what the difference is for the Netherlands. I think another factor is it's less common for gay and lesbian couples to have kids in the Netherlands than it is here in the U.S., and that might be one difference, because here in the U.S., it's exactly the opposite. Lesbians are much more likely to get married than our gay male couples. And I think that's, you know, partly about kids, and that's partly maybe about other things that women in the U.S. Maybe don't have as much of the feminist concern and are, you know, just understand the emotional component of marriage more than the men do.
Are lesbian couples in the U.S. also more likely than gay men to parent together, to have children?
Yes. Mainly we know about couples who have children living with them. We don't really know. Probably many of them are from prior heterosexual relationships. But definitely in Census 2000, more than 30% of lesbian couples were living with kids under the age of 18, and it was only about 20% or so for gay men. So that's quite a difference. And it's, you know, it's obviously much easier for a lesbian couple to use alternative insemination to become pregnant and have a kid. The gay male couples would have to adopt or you know, do some sort of surrogacy. But we know that lots of couples, both male and female couples, want to have kids.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. We're talking to Lee Badgett about her new book, When Gay People Get Married. Let's go next to Gun Barrel City and speak with Jennifer. Hey, Jennifer.
Hi. After working a long time in human resources in a multi-state corporation, we always had to remind married couples when they came to Texas, for example, that they had relocated to a community property state. That said, do married couples who married in a state that recognizes homosexual unions, do they have to be careful about relocating or even retiring to a state that does not recognize both marriages?
That's a great question, and I think this is one of the things one of the problems we're going to be seeing with our patchwork of laws here in the U.S. is exactly that. A couple who gets married in Massachusetts and lives here and goes on vacation somewhere else or retires somewhere else, moves somewhere else for a new job, they're going to find that they're going to be treated very differently. And I think it's going to make the states that recognize their marriages much more attractive places to live. We saw that with Massachusetts, too. Same-sex couples who are in what some people call the creative class, a highly educated kind of knowledge professionals, that they were moving to Massachusetts more than they had before. Before gay couples could get married, my colleague Gary Gates did that research. So I think that we'll see people being much pickier about where they are willing to live.
And you did this research in the Netherlands, I guess, before you were married. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's right.
And you and your partner had kind of a pleasant surprise when you got to, I don't know if it was customs or when you were registering to live there together for a year. You could fill out the same form for the first time ever.
That's right. It was pretty amazing, actually. I mean, it was not very romantic, but we were able to go down to what they call the foreign police, where you have to register when you're a foreigner, and they were willing to recognize the fact that we lived in a country that didn't recognize our relationship, but they were going to because we had lived together and we signed a piece of paper saying that we were, that we lived together for many years, and I think I had to sign a piece of paper. It was in Dutch, so I'm not sure exactly what I committed to doing, but I think I had to sign a piece of paper that said I promised to support her because she was on an unpaid leave from her job, and so it was, you know, it was about as close to marriage as we could get up to that point.
Which is not to say that even in the Netherlands that there is not any residual concern and social discomfort among some segments of the population with the idea of gay and lesbian couples being married.
No, that's right. It's not universal. Some of the people that I talked to had parents, mothers in particular, who reacted negatively. Many of those mothers changed their minds eventually, but the opinion polls still show that there are some people who oppose the idea of gay marriage. There are some pockets of very religious people who have religious beliefs that don't see gay marriage as a good thing. And you know, some of those are Christian minorities, and some of them are Muslim minorities. And there are many immigrants to the Netherlands from Muslim countries, and there's certainly a strand of fundamentalist Islam that sees gay marriage as a very, very bad thing.
MV Lee Badgett is my guest. We're talking this hour about her new book, When Gay People Get Married, What Happens When Societies Legalize Same-Sex Marriage. We'll take more of your calls and emails after the break. You can get to us by phone at 1-800-933-5372. Our email address is think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's informal courses for adults. Short courses in the arts, writing, languages, history, and communication start weekly in September. You can learn something new. Details at smu.edu/think.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is MV Lee Badgett. Her new book is called When Gay People Get Married, What Happens When Societies Legalize Same-Sex Marriage. If you want to join us, give us a call at 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org. I realize that we're just past the period of the seven-year itch, even for the Netherlands, but what can we say definitively about divorce rates among same-sex couples as compared with heterosexual couples who've been married the same amount of time?
We don't really know yet. We know a little bit, and I will say that, you know, when I've talked to people about my book, their first question is your next book going to be on gay divorce? And what we know is that in the States, in Vermont, for instance, the dissolution rates for civil unions are about the same as they are for marriages. We've definitely have seen some high-profile divorces in Massachusetts. The lead plaintiffs in the case got divorced. The case that led to the decision to let gay couples get married here. In Europe, in the Netherlands, the one study that I saw showed that the divorce rates are about the same for same-sex couples and gay couples. The only one that shows something different is in Sweden, where a recent study found that gay couples were more likely to dissolve their relationships than were heterosexual couples. And I'm not sure that's a great comparison, though, again, because it was registered partnerships and not marriages. So we might have been comparing apples and oranges. But it could just be that that gay couples are certainly getting married at a later stage in their relationships, and you know, to the extent that, you know, many relationships are going to end, gay or straight, they're just a little bit closer to that end point. And so, you know, for at least the first few years, it looks like the divorce rates will be higher. So I think it's going to take a lot more time before we know how similar or different those patterns will be.
Of course, we've heard a lot about the situation in California, which revoked marriage rights after having granted them. Are there any places anywhere else in the world where states have sort of taken back the rights of same-sex couples to marry?
Nope. I think that's it. I think that this was a very sad occasion for all those couples who got married out in California. We estimated that about 18,000 of them had gotten married, and now it's all a big mess. I mean, when Jennifer was calling about, you know, what happens when couples move around, I think it's going to be a big headache for companies, for the state to figure out who really counts as getting married, because the Supreme Court said, well, those couples who already got married, we'll still let them stay married, but they didn't really say, you know, what a couple, you know, who was married in Massachusetts and lived in California and couldn't get married again, that California wouldn't let them get married twice. You know, do they count as married? It's not really clear. So I think there will be lots of headaches ahead in trying to sort out that reversal.
I know that you're also an expert in sexual orientation law, and so I'd like to know how far away you think we are in time from a sort of Roe v. Wade Supreme Court case that will decide this at a federal level.
Oh, that's where I need a real crystal ball, I think. My guess is that when enough states have recognized marriages for same-sex couples, it will not seem so strange for the Supreme Court to say, this is a right that we're now going to recognize for same-sex couples in all states. The question is, you know, where is that tipping point? And I think that's where it's very hard to know. I think we're a long way from that tipping point right now. I mean, we've got three states where couples can actually literally get married right now. You know, that's Massachusetts, Vermont, Connecticut. Massachusetts, Connecticut, and Iowa. Vermont will start up pretty soon, as will New Hampshire and possibly Maine. But that's, you know, that's only six states. And even if California goes back to the ballot box and reverses Prop 8, which some people want to try to do, that's still only seven states. So there's, you know, we're at maybe 20-25% of the population in terms of those six or seven states. And that's, I don't think that's enough. It's going to take more than that. And the big unknown is, you know, most of the other states, about 40 states, have either laws or constitutional amendments that say same-sex couples can't get married, and that will take a lot of time to try to overturn those. So if I had to really say, would it be in the next 10 years, I would be surprised. 20, I think, might be a little more likely. But actually, you know, I'm mainly an economist, and, you know, economists like to make all sorts of predictions, but we aren't always that good at it. So don't hold me to that one.
Well, has Proposition 8 made same-sex couples who are married in other states feel a little more tentative, perhaps, about the solidity of the law's backing of their unions?
I think in the states that we're talking about, it's not very likely to be overturned. Mm-hmm. So I think the couples in Iowa, there's not really an easy way for somebody to go overturn that decision. Likewise, in Connecticut and Massachusetts now, just politically in Massachusetts, it could happen, but it's not very likely anymore. I think that there is a sense that the longer the time period for gay couples to get married goes on, the more acceptance there is. There's just, you know, in Massachusetts, just the level of debate has just dropped considerably. I mean, the emotional tone is gone. Even people who disagree with giving gay couples the right to marry are, you know, they recognize it's not going to change, and they should, you know, they're getting used to it, I think. And so in all these other states, I think we'll see the same kind of dynamic. And you know, if people do move around enough and go to other states and say, you know, we're married. You know, you may not recognize it at the legal level, but we want you to treat us as if we're married socially. I think that will have the same kind of effect as more couples come out. And because that is one thing that marriage does, it makes gay couples much more visible. And I think that has a lot of potential to change things.
One of the things that has interested you as an economist is the idea that there is a huge industry potentially to be tapped here if this is legalized throughout the country.
Yes, people spend a lot of money on weddings. It's kind of amazing. I think the average before the recession was about $28,000 per wedding, and I think it's gone down quite a bit during the recession, but it's still over $20,000. And, you know, so in a time when you know, businesses are looking for new opportunities, you know, hotels and restaurants and wedding planners and florists and photographers in these states where gay couples can get married are starting to advertise to the gay community and to say, hey, you know, we're happy to help you celebrate your happy day, because they actually stand to gain from it. And in Massachusetts, we estimated that marriage for gay couples brought in over $100 million to the state, both from out-of-state couples and from couples who live here getting married. And, you know, that turns out to be a lot of people's jobs. And so I think as the economy gets tougher, it, you know, maybe one of the things that will help change people's minds is to realize that many good things can come out of it.
Do you know whether the wedding industry has a significant lobbying presence on Capitol Hill trying to, or in state capitals, trying to convince lawmakers to consider this?
Not so much in Washington, but I have heard that chambers of commerce have sometimes been supportive in certain parts of New England in particular, and businesses have said, hey, we think that this is a good thing. The other angle that's also pretty important right now is the fact that that state budgets stand to gain by letting gay couples get married. Actually, the federal budget would see a net gain if gay couples could get married. And so lawmakers are now, you know, I think this is maybe less a really great reason to let gay couples get married and more of a reason to not be worried about what will happen if we let gay couples get married. But these economic interests do seem to attract attention.
Has there been any solid research that sort of takes the pulse of heterosexual couples and whether or not they feel that the meaning of their own marriage has been remotely affected by the fact that there's a couple next door who happen to be of the same sex that are married?
No, and I think that's really the next kind of research that I would be very interested in trying to do. Because what I heard from the gay couples that I interviewed, when they talked about the reactions of their families and of their friends, I didn't hear any evidence that those families and friends were thinking about their marriages differently. They were basically trying to impose their idea of marriages on their gay kids and grandchildren and brothers and sisters, that sort of thing. And so I think what's happening, what's more likely to be happening, based on my findings, is that heterosexuals are thinking differently, not about marriage, but about same-sex couples. And I think, you know, just think about this from the perspective of parents who find out their kid's gay. I mean, I think you know, psychologists who've studied this process see that parents go through many stages sometimes of coming to grips with this issue. And I think one of the challenges is how do they think about their kids' partners? You know, are these folks, you know, just friends, you know, that's sort of a euphemism that parents will often use. Is that person just your child's roommate? Is this something more like a boyfriend or girlfriend, but being, you know, the equivalent of an unmarried boyfriend or girlfriend for a heterosexual child? You know, parents, it's not really clear how they should be thinking about these things. And that's one of the things that marriage does. It tells parents and other family members, this person is family now. This person is, you know, you're supposed to send a birthday card and a birthday present to this person. You know, buy this person a Christmas present. Treat the same-sex partner who's now a spouse the same way that you treat your heterosexual kid's spouses. So I think that's a change not in marriage. That's a change in how we think about gay couples.
If you wouldn't mind talking a little bit about your life, do you feel differently about your relationship to your partner now that she is your wife?
I do. It's kind of funny. She is not a social scientist, but she likes asking people that question too. And she has asked lots of gay couples, and she says that in every couple, one person says, yes, it made a difference, and the other person says, oh, no, not so much. In our relationship, I'm definitely the yes person, and it's kind of hard to describe. I think I felt more of a sense of commitment and actually kind of a responsibility for her in a way that that felt new. And you know, it's hard to put these things into words. And you know, as I'm an economist, we tend to be very practical and rational. And finally, one friend of mine, as I was struggling to describe this, she just said, "Look, that was a ritual. You know, that's about feelings. That's much more powerful than you know than you can actually put into words." So it was an interesting experience. This all happened after I was in the Netherlands and while I was still writing the book, and I certainly learned a lot from the couples that I interviewed in terms of how I ended up thinking about marriage.
Did any of what you experienced during the time that you were engaged and finally got married, did it compare with whatever fantasies you might have had as a little girl about someday having a wedding and being married?
Ew, you know, I'm not sure I ever really had those fantasies.
Is that because you couldn't imagine at the time being able to marry a woman?
No, I think even before I, you know, was aware of being a lesbian, it wasn't something that, that I saw as being that interesting. I mean, I was, what I guess we still call tomboys, and you know, the thought of having to wear a long white dress would not have been something that I would have seen as particularly attractive. But the other piece of it definitely had to do later on with a sense of feeling excluded from it and mm-hmm. thinking, is this something that, that I really want to do? I shouldn't even get my hopes up. To be honest with you, I was as surprised as anyone when we did have the opportunity to get married here.
The last thing I want to ask you is about the reaction from people in general when they find out what you've been studying and what you've been doing. Do you see a difference in the acceptance of the average American of the idea that same-sex couples, in fact, have long-term committed relationships that may end up in marriage or simply are valid relationships?
I think so. I don't have to spend as much time convincing people of that. I think for a long time the discussion about same-sex couples was, it was as if, gay couples were these aliens who, were suddenly discovered somewhere, and nobody knew anything about them. And I think what's happened over time is gay people have become more visible. We know that more and more people say they know gay family members and friends, and I think it's just really normalized the idea of who gay people are and who gay couples are.
M.V. Lee Badgett is professor of economics at the University of Massachusetts at Amherst. Her new book is called When Gay People Get Married, What Happens When Societies Legalize Same-Sex Marriage. Lee, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. I enjoyed it.
My name is Chris Boyd. Thank you for listening and have a great day.
Think is produced by Jeff Whittington and engineered by Jeannie Mascoro. Learn about upcoming programs, subscribe to our free daily podcast, and order CD copies of your favorite Think shows on the radio page of KERA.org. And we'd like to hear what you think about Think. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@KERA.org.